All right, discussionary items. Superintendent Shaw.
Thank you, sir. So last night, we, from our workshop, wanted to bring back to you the two items. One is I did have a conversation with Metz today, and we will be bringing forth more information that you requested. And so I talked with Chad about that. But then I also did ask Terry Joseph if she would speak in regards to the professional development materials that we presented last night, too. So she's going to open with that, and then we'll get right into the rest of the items.
Sure. Thank you. So last night in the board workshop session, we were able to present to you a proposal to continue our partnership for professional learning for our teachers with the Reading Writing Project Network. And there were just some concerns that were brought up that I thought I might be able to address. One was the timeliness of the way that this was presented to the board. We do want you to know that our intent was to be able to provide you with a complete and thorough presentation. Throughout the summer, we looked at our data, thought about what our needs were, thought about what that plan would look like, negotiated a contract, tried to secure funding, and there were some back and forth things. I think if you notice the date on the contract, it was just revised again a few days ago. So as we presented that to you, we wanted to make sure that we had the most thorough and accurate information available. Another point is our teachers. Our teachers are really excited about this work. We have a lot of people who have expressed a strong desire to be able to continue this form of learning. One of the things that we feel is really special about this is that it is consultants who are specialists coming into our schools and working alongside of our teachers on a regular, consistent, planned basis. And so, you know, teachers look forward to that. They're able to take that learning right back with them to their classrooms and implement things. You know, it supports all K-8 teachers, as we talked about last night. But it also, you know, when we think about, you know, what we try to provide for our students, we try to provide our kids with the very best learning that we can, and we feel we owe it to our teachers to also provide them with the very best learning that we can. And we do believe that this is a good next step for us. Another big point is the content of the professional development. So when these staff developers are working with our teachers, it's not necessarily solely focused on Lucy Calkins or the units of study. It's focused on good teaching. It's focused on the art of teaching. It's focused on strategies that transcend whatever the curriculum materials are. So if a teacher is learning about how to use assessments to be able to create small groups and provide instruction. Jenna provided an example of that last night where she talked about how she used the phonics assessment from the Lucy Calkins phonics work. But within that, as she was looking at that and she could decide, well, you know, who's not reading all the way through a word? Like who's, you know, stuck on the last final consonant, who's stuck on short vowels or long vowels. She can provide instruction in that and then look to see our kids applying that new learning as they're reading. So, you know, that again, I believe Holly Van Klingeren talked about the vocabulary strategy. Like that's just a good way to think about teaching vocabulary. So whether the curriculum is the units of study or if it were to ever become something else, these teachers will just be better teachers because of the learning experiences that we were able to provide for them. And then just a final point, we do know this is a costly proposal. It's $379,600, but we were able to secure grant funds to be able to purchase that, so none of that would be coming out of our general fund budgets. So just a few points as I was, you know, reflecting on the conversation from last night and thought I might be able to provide, you know, a little bit more thought or information for consideration as you're making your decision tonight.
I know last evening we had an approximate value for, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Last evening, we had approximate value of what monies were coming from what, and I think we had about 200,000. Did we have any more specificity on that, or is that, we just don't know yet?
I did not have time in my day today to make that specific allocation, in part because we do still have some unfinished items in ESSER as far as the projects go, and that's kind of the contingency money. We don't know exactly where we're going to fall with that to be able to give a firm value. I know 102,000 is already allocated in the 35J grant, so then the remainder would be split between ESSER 3 and then our early literacy funds.
How much early literacy funds do we have available?
It varies from year to year. It's typically between 50 to 60,000, plus we do have some carried over from last year.
So as of, like, say, today or, you know, present time, do we have what about?
I can't tell you at the present time because I
don't. I just want to make sure before we make a commitment for $379,000 that we have 200.
I know we're carrying over about 25,000. And historically, the last several years, it's been between $50,000 to $60,000. It just depends on where our pupil count comes in for K-6 students.
So I want to make sure we have adequate funds.
Correct.
We commit ourselves. Mm-hmm.
Understand. If I may, I am confident that we do have sufficient unspent funds in ESSER. I just don't want to give you a firm number that I'm not able to be certain about.
Are any? This is probably the last purchase of any item that we'll do with ESSER 3, isn't it? Or do we have anything else?
Yes, we are winding down. We have to have everything spent by December and obligated by September 30th.
Do we have anything else in the pipelines on ESSER 3 that we...
Not that I've been part of any discussions on, because we've used the majority of it for summer school and those projects and the other things that have already been presented to the board.
And those have been accounted for?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So, Terry, thank you for following up on the extensive conversation we had last night. We understand, I understood, I know from the presentation that this is something that is being, you know, cheered upon and people like. I look at outcomes and value. So we talked about it last night that there were three assessments that are being used to determine outcomes. We have received two of those. We have not received the third one yet, which is MSTEPS, that's coming out in 2 weeks. So when we're looking at value and outcomes, that's a third assessment that's assessing the programming that we've been using for the past year. And I know I've been here for 2 years and we're still, you know, saying, well, you know, we need those numbers. And I believe that if we're going to say a program is successful, we need to have the numbers to support the subjective opinions of those that are involved. And I'm glad that it's such a good thing, but we have to see the numbers. We got to see the value. So the fact that we have not received that third assessment, I think, is important, and it was part of the discussion that we had last night, and I still think that's part of the discussion. The other part of it is with the financial part of it. I believe in the board briefs it talked about the decodable text, and I believe that's like $97,000 or something. Plus there was an additional money used at that. So we're not just looking at 379. We're looking at well over, probably close to $450,000 to be spent on this current programming that's being suggested. So I would feel more comfortable if we had all the numbers. I know we asked for them, and I know the time frame, Cassie, was short, but I didn't think we thought that the time frame would be this short, because we do have the next couple of weeks before MSTEPS come in. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of reiterate, as you did, the points that were brought up last night and the reason for some hesitation on saying, let's do this now, and I think they were very valid points.
Sure. If you don't mind, okay.
Terry. Okay, all right. I'll let Cassie go, and then I can add in if needed.
I know that Mrs. Wiley also wrote in some of the decodable text purchases in the 35J grant. I'm not sure how, I don't want to speak for her on her behalf, but I'm not sure how far she is in to determining which classrooms have or don't have those items. So I think that's why that's not part of this package at this time, because we're still determining precisely what needs to be ordered.
But they're tied together. You can't have one without the other, essentially.
The decodable text would be a supplement to the professional development that we're offering to our teachers. It's not mandated that you have to have both.
Right. But according to the board briefs, that would be what would be utilized in with the programming in order to, according to what I'm hearing, make the program more successful. So again, there's still numbers that are outlying. There's information we don't have. There's data that's not included. I just think we have an incomplete package in order to move forward.
So if I could just add a little bit of information around the decodable text, and Andrew, if there's anything else you would like to add. So a unique thing about the 35J grant funding is that it is for literacy professional learning. You can buy resources with it, with those grant funds, but if you buy resources with that grant money, you have to provide professional development to teachers and how to use it as well. So you are right, like those things are connected together, but we were working within the parameters of the grant.
But we don't have that. I think what else we were missing last night, and if I missed it in my notes, we don't have the dollar amounts that's coming from ESSER 3, and we don't have the dollar amounts that's coming from which grant? There's three. I thought there were three.
35J is the one that it's some.
Go ahead.
Am I hearing that right? That 35J, the total grant is 105, approximately. Give or take.
That is not the total grant. That is the amount that was allocated in the grant just for the professional development. The full amount of the grant, I want to say, was that the one that was 700,000
or 600?
Yeah, it was in the 600,000 range. Okay. In total, and that grant is actually able to be spent in the 24-25 school year and I think 25-26 in part. I forget.
I think it's September of
25. Okay. So we do have the ability to spend all this.
We're kind of doing it in the inverse.
Maybe.
Well, we wouldn't be able to move forward with any purchases if we don't have professional development security. So we have to have professional development with that grant.
The state loves to throw nuances into the grants.
Well, that's part of any process. So.
So I appreciate that. The last point that I'll make here too is, yes, we do have one more data point. That data point will come out actually presented to the board at the first board meeting or workshop here in September. So that's when we're looking. The release of the data will be the end of August, but as far as the presentation to the board formally. The other thing I would also say too is when we really start to look at the work we've been doing in with the caucus materials, the PD that's been associated with it, the thought pattern that I think for each board member is what's the expectation of how much achievement would occur then in 1 year. You know, we talked about the amount of professional development being offered and provided. And so when we begin to look at that, you know, like the MSTEP or even iReady or others, there's going to be only so much growth that you're going to have. And so I think in terms of this is a long run. It's not a short sprint. And to think like, even like on the math materials that we just went through, that if our scores aren't looking good in 1 year, we're going to dump it. Well, that's ridiculous. We spent that much money, but you have to give it time for teachers to be develop on that, to work it, and let the process happen. And so it's not one of those things where all of a sudden you're just making big changes right as you're getting started. And so that would be my argument is that we've applied, we've put in the time this last year in professional development, and continue to make that professional. I make the argument, like Terry did, that this is not just in the area of reading, but this is good teaching practices, and so this work is happening right there. So I was just sharing this that and implore you to move forward with that approval tonight. So
if I may, I I look at this as we're looking for information and data to be able to make a decision. I mean, so I always want, give me all that I need. So when I make a decision, I know that I'm making the right decision for the right reasons. I believe there's going to be good outcomes and there's value for the money being spent. I'm not here to argue, and I'm not trying to be another side of an argument against anything. I mean, I want the best programs that we have. I want the best that we can do. But I also think there has to be at some point, I sat out in that audience for a couple of years, and then I've sat here for a couple of years, and it seems like every year it's like, okay, we're doing something new, so we're going to look at data the next year, and we're not going to see growth for another year. And I just would like to see some.
Tom?
Yeah, and last night at the work session, I was certainly a little bit hesitant based on the timing to the M-STEPs, and it would be great to see the M-STEP as that additional data point. Though I got to thinking, if you look at it, if, let's say, the M-STEPs turn out to be great, it looks like we're making progress. Okay, so that would tell us that the development, the training is effective. If the M-STEPs aren't so good, it probably indicates that we just need more training, because obviously the program is there, the teachers are enthusiastic about it, and maybe we just need a little bit more training. I did look again at the iReady assessments that we had earlier, I guess I'd call it early spring or late year, and it does appear that we're seeing a turn, which is good. Obviously, it's like turning a freighter.
Yeah.
We just want to get it moving in the right direction, and I'd like to keep that momentum going. So last night I was hesitant. I think tonight, I think we should move forward with the training.
Okay. Carrie? Good. Scott?
Nothing to add.
Mary?
Nothing to add.
Back to you, Andy.
Okay. So I appreciate that, everybody. Overnight field trip approval process. So a couple months ago we had to inform you about overnight field trip, and I had to approve it before it came to the board. And so what we learned from that was we did a deep dive. What you have to always remember is like in systems, you always have past practice. So as you guys saw in the past was past practice. Materials come in front of you, you approve it. But what we've learned was, though, that NELA helps us also with our administrative guidelines. And in there, they really came right out, and we should have drawn and captured this, was that these items should always be in front of you before we even have a conversation with kids. So then that way, the Board of Education has that opportunity to decide pre-conversations with kids about, are we going to approve it or not? I'll give you an example, is that I'm the French teacher, and we have a French club, and we want to take the French club over to France for 5 days. And at that point in time, you guys may not be at all in favor of it, but I've already had conversations. We've already done fundraising and all this stuff. Give it to you, just ahead of it, and you're like, well, now we have no choice but to approve it, even though we don't think we should. So the process has changed to where you're going to have that opportunity to approve something prior to any conversations with students. So that would be, we'll use the one that pops up quite often is, in the world of athletics, all three seasons, we have kids that go overnight somewhere, all right? So Dr. Hessen will go through this and fill this document out, and it'll get in your hands. You can approve it or not approve it. That would be your guys' choice, but it'll be filled out. So if we look at the front page, and it's just a simple two-page document, if the board approves this, these are the documents, which we've shown you guys the documents that has to be supplied to the principal, okay? But on the second page, is a document that you will receive. And this document right here will be completed. And then at that point in time, presented by the building, by either of our executive directors, I've got a water. It'll be gone in 2 minutes here. That gives you guys that privilege of any of our overnight field trips that have, it'll be in front of you months ahead of time before there's any conversation with a student or around getting anyone excited for something. Because again, things could happen and we were like, we really do not believe that going to that location is right. I think they need to look at something else. And so what you're going to receive then is this very, that page right there is what's coming in front of you. No other documents, because they won't, they can't have any other documents because they haven't done it. The rest of the documents is what the building administrator will receive from the person that's running the trip. And then between Terry and David, they work with the building administrator to go look at them, go, okay, everything is good. You follow the process, then, because the board's already approved it, you're good to go. And so then we won't be in a situation where people haven't gotten things into us timely, and or in a situation where you feel like all we did is just, we approved something, we had really no choice but to approve. So are there any questions on what's changing?
I kind of like that system. It sounds very logical.
Yeah.
Because obviously, if we're not going to approve it, we don't want kids fundraising and
right.
things like that.
Or have kids excited.
You're right.
What do you feel the timeline will be for that? I mean, given that some groups will plan for the next season.
Yep.
For example, the band is planning 2 years from now.
Right. Yeah.
They are. So what's going to happen is we're sharing this with you tonight because tomorrow is when we have our principals and secretaries back to school day with them. And this is what we're going over, and because we wanted to make sure it was uniform so everyone understood it. And that's what's going to happen in this. You know, it's just that transition time right here of getting everyone to see that. What we actually anticipate is once the band has figured out what trips they want to do for this next year, they fill out their two or three, whatever number forms it is, and get it in front of you. It may not be, I mean, you could honestly, at our September meeting, see that document for next summer for the band. And that's what you should see, because they're already going to be doing fundraising, and or even for 2 years from now, okay? Because they might already have that decided, because I know they got to figure out stuff well in advance, especially for the locations they go to lock it down, okay?
Or if they go to Disney.
Yep, or if they begin to think about, like, hey, we want to take a trip to Disney, or anything that's overnight, correct. So it's in front of you sooner. And so tomorrow we present it to our principals and the secretaries, and then they begin to then push it out to our key members and our athletic directors there also, to those that will be taking part in it.
I also think this is fantastic, and I think it makes a whole lot more sense. So kudos to everybody that put it together. Does this then support with the policy? Mm-hmm. There's no changes needed
no
to the policy?
No changes in policy.
Okay.
No change in policy. What it does, it just reinforces so that we shouldn't be in that situation where something has come in late. So my next item for you was the Custer parent loop. So we put a document in front of you. It gives you both parent loops, one for Manor. And I'm going to take two seconds on Manor. I've given it working with the city. And so they are working on their approval process for us to with an easement through the park. And then they're going to get approved by at City Hall. And so once that happens, it'll be then we can go ahead and bring forward a recommendation on Manor. Our goal for Manor is, and talking with the city about it, we'd like to be able to have something in front of our board at our next meeting on Manor's. I'm sorry, not on Manor's numbers right there. But then if we go to Custer, you can see.
Back on Manor.
Okay, on Manor's.
I mean,
yes.
Is the city kind of on board?
Oh, very much.
And they will have everything you think.
Yep. Yeah, the city has all the documents. We sat down, we talked to them about 2 months ago, I think, 3 months ago. And it was actually a perfect timing because they're getting ready to do some work at that park. And they love the idea there. So the last step I have to do is, while the city's doing that, is go talk to those seven houses.
I know that.
That was my question. Do we meet with them?
Yep, go talk with those homeowners. The interesting thing is because Tim's been out there just getting some quotes, people talk to him. You know, they go, well, we're not thrilled about them being in our backyard, but it beats having them in our front yard.
Right.
Yeah. So
instead of blocking the whole street.
Yep, right.
Exactly, right there. So more to come on the Manor, but that one will be our goal is to have something in front of you here in still in August.
Will that be asphalt or?
So it'll be stone this year, and then next year it would have to be asphalt. That is a requirement of the city. But we don't want to put the asphalt down this year. We want to have time so that all those cars driving it, packing
settled.
It. Settle it, and it'll make so we don't see the cracks in the asphalt quite as fast, right there.
Is Raisinville ever going to be asphalted or no?
At this point in time, we don't have that on our plans.
Okay.
It could be. You know, it's not as high up on the list of areas we need to pave. We didn't have them pushing gravel off into the with the snow issues out there.
Yeah. Plus, there's no dust can blow across the field at Raisinville.
Yeah.
You don't want to go in the backyards here.
And the only other reason, too, at Raisinville that we may not is then we don't have to deal with, I'm sorry, work alongside of the county and the drains and all that, okay? So.
Very good catch on the Floridian.
Yeah. No, I did not mean it that way, but that is a factor because.
I think, though, Raisinville in the spring could be a problem. I know they put the underlayment underneath the stone, but yep. I find in a few years that.
Yeah.
So
we may have to do some asphalt work. I know Tim had back in. We put down some more more rock on it this spring and to level it off. And so hopefully through a lot of compaction here, even this year, that we'll see how that keeps moving.
You know, on Raisinville, do we put a tile in there on the other side of the loop before we put?
I think it was already there.
There was already a driveway.
Tiles in there, but I mean, did we put around the loops that drained the loop out?
No, there was no, because it was okay. Pretty flat there.
Well, that is the problem.
Yeah.
Pretty flat.
Yeah.
But the question is, was it tiled before?
Well, I know that field next to it's tiled, too. And that, but I would assume that the 20-foot tiles, I'm thinking.
I don't know. It's something I can ask.
We'll ask Tim. Just trying to avoid some problems this spring.
In the Custer loop, this was an idea that was presented by Melissa Bell came to me and said, hey, what do we think about this? And so we kind of drew it up for you, and you can see you can either go to the second to last or last page right there. You can see us coming in off of Elbin Road, and it would be to the east of the buildings and go right along the fence row, going all the way back to the big baseball field where there's the outfield fence and then a turn come alongside. The measurements on that, if you give me 1 second, I've got a picture off of my phone that I took of it. So these measurements of this.
I don't know. Is it this one?
Hey, Andy. Is this the loop or is that the loop?
No, it's the more.
The red one?
The opaque white one. That other one is actually a walking path that it's the parents.
Oh, you're right. There is a walking
PTA path. Put in.
Right.
Yes.
The red one.
Yep.
Okay, go faster here. Just. And so it measures, if you go from Elbin Road all the way back, that's 2,000 feet. Okay, before we make that first turn to the right. So you're looking at all the way around, so it's 2,000. We're looking at about all the way around, you know, it's almost 4,500 feet down to there. But for the parent line where they're going to be doing the pickups, you're looking at right around that 2,800 to 3,000 feet. So a lot of distance to where we can get a lot of cars, and so they're not on that road.
Any idea how many cars that would be?
So what I've looked at is
1,000 divided by 10.
I even kept it at 20 feet per vehicle. So
okay.
But yeah, only because I was trying to.
What number did you come up with?
No, we came up with 60 or something like that.
Yeah.
But it could be
double lane or single lane.
So it's a double lane because you got people coming in, people exiting. But it's not like out at Raisinville where it's two lanes going around. Coming in, it's a single lane because you got people that'll be exiting.
Which way are they going, Auburn or either way?
Yeah. Either way. At that point there.
So you could have people turning left to try and get onto that path?
Turning left to get.
See, if they're coming off Telegraph, then they're
coming this way.
Telegraph.
Coming Telegraph.
Or Monroe Street.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that if we could, we can do what we can.
Yeah, you're going to have west cars.
Both. It's the exact same thing we're going to have. Fortunately, at Manor, leaving's not a problem, but getting in there, we're going to advise, just like we try to even advise out at Raisinville, please come from this direction and enter from this direction, exit. So, example, come in from Dixie, turn right in there, and please turn right out. That will be an advisory, but oddly enough, parents will do it. Now, go ahead, Tom.
Well, you're probably getting to this, but I'm assuming in the big building, they're coming out of the south end of the building.
Yes, sir.
The small building. Say if it's a rainy day, how are they getting over there?
So they're going to, Wild Thing is they're going to have to walk. We are looking at putting a canopy up out there so that there is coverage for both. So when we get the kids outside.
There is a little canopy.
There is over
there.
There is one right here. Yeah.
Do you have a complete canopy between the Custer 1 and Custer 2?
No. Just a canopy for them to go under
okay.
right there.
What's the thought of using that side of the property as compared to the other side of the property?
So when we really started thinking about it was trying to keep the buses and the parents separated. And not having cars going through the parking lot. And we couldn't come up with without going behind the whole building, buildings and soccer field, to do that. And that was the whole thing is the parking lots are a major problem there, you know, because you get trapped, you're not getting out, and or even having kids move. And so the idea was like, all right, buses are come in normal like they already do. Parents are over here. Now, this one's going to take a lot longer. And when I say a lot longer, we're going to work with Monroe Township, the county, make sure that we got no issues there. We're going to be looking at drainage. We're going to look at a lot of other things. So this is a larger project. But again, on this one, our hopes is that you're going to see something from us late September, early October here.
Now, I don't know if it still happens. I can remember when I was going to Custer, the kids in Southfield Village actually would walk home.
Yep.
And it looks like, I think that gate is probably at the end of Robinwood or somewhere
it
in
is.
That area?
It is. Yep, it's right there.
So they're going to be crossing some of this traffic.
Yep. So that's what we have to do is we have to look at a crossing guard right there for them.
That's okay. What I was wondering if you're going to put a crossing guard on Alden Road there.
Yep.
There's also one on that new subdivision behind it.
Yeah.
And there's a gate right.
Yeah, but I don't think.
Okay, come back into here.
Yeah.
They're gonna, I'm assuming they're going to go this way, so you're going to be a way
past. Yeah.
Rather than crossing it.
Yeah.
Here. Stagger it, let the kids go walk home first.
I haven't seen them in the
They can go, yeah, they can
kids go in Southfield Village anymore.
So,
can I ask
I sent
you a question?
Yes.
So, with the diagram, it looks like they're going to be, so those are swing sets.
Yep, the swing sets would be removed and moved over, moved somewhere else.
Okay, so the students aren't going to be losing any of their recess equipment?
No.
Okay.
Nope. Relocated.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
And we have a lot of room, especially down at the west side.
Yep. So the only thing that you do need to be aware of is, and you can just see it if you look down there, a little softball field, okay? Mm-hmm. And so that would be moved to another location out there, all right? But that's the only thing.
On the property? Or
oh, it's on the property. Yeah, no. Yep, so.
Is he talking about this one?
This one right here. So if you look at that second curve right there, you'll
right
look straight
there.
Down, you'll see there's a little softball field that sits right there.
Yeah, I don't. Think that's really used.
I don't think
it so Dave and I were out there with Tim and we actually had that conversation and we do have people that occasionally go out there and we may actually we'll have conversations with all the other people about can we just use the other big field we have there. Plus we have another small one, so there's two fields out there. But if people come back and say, you know, we really need this, we can move it. We've got property there to.
Yeah, you've actually removed a lot of the ball fields from when I was a kid.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So know that this is a project that's in the works, but this one's going to take a little bit more time because it's just the scope of it is a lot larger. Okay. But, well, like I said, this was the one that we came up with like to resolve the issue so we wouldn't have buses and cars together crossing over. It would be, just so you know too, it would be a driver's side drop-off pickup, okay? And the reason for that is we had to maximize the amount of distance on our property to get the most cars in. So that's why it's a driver's side pickup and drop-off. So, wonderful. And so those documents are for you. And so with that, Cindy.
Which was first?
Staffing.
There's a couple leaps in numbers, like Monroe High School.
because that number was lower, and now it's higher because we weren't, like, people come, people go, we really weren't sure. That's one that has the biggest variation. And we also, tomorrow in our back to school, are going to talk about the importance of a status form. Because you may have, in Monroe High, you may have four, we'll use this as an example, four interventionists or academic tutors. Well, those four positions may be made up with eight people because maybe they only work 2 days a week, 3 days a week. Assistants, they have 11 assistants that may have 11 people that need them, but it may be more than 11. I mean, it's just the way it is. So the true number is 11708 because there are some that are 0.5 and there's another part-time math teacher. But I thought that this gives you a really good picture of at the secondary how it looks, and I think it's very equitable across the board at the elementaries with the four elementaries that we have left. It looks like we have, it's pretty equitable based on student population at the elementaries.
130 coaches, is that right? Am I reading that right? Yes, sir.
130 coaches, athletic?
Yeah.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
Probably.
Between middle school and high school?
Yep.
We have many.
It sounds like it. I never knew we had that many.
Well, they have the coach. They have the assistant coach. Then they have the, you know, like the 7th grade coach, 8th grade coach. And then again, they may share positions where there are two coaches that split the duty.
Are those coaches all Monroe Public School employees or edge staff?
No, most of them are edge staff.
Okay.
They are edge staff. I don't have the exact number of which are edge staff and which are Monroe. But, I mean, we do everything in our power to get our Monroe people, our teachers, and other ancillary help to be coaches. It's just really nice when they're in our system, they know our kids, but that sometimes it doesn't happen.
Does a Monroe, if I'm a Monroe employee, do I have the choice to be paid through EdgeStaff, or can I pick EdgeStaff, or?
Okay. No. If you're,
appreciate that.
If you're an employee through us through payroll, we have to pay any remuneration for services through payroll per ORS. And even if you were a retired staff member, retired through MIPSRS, we actually would have to pay you again through payroll and report that because they've changed things the last couple of years, but there's usually some earnings limitations and certain situations where we still have to collect some contributions even if you're retired.
Thank you.
It depends on the person. Not to step on Mrs. Flynn's toes, but it depends on who is given the position. If it's someone existing in our system, then obviously they would stay on payroll. If the there's no way to know until they choose a candidate. Your office does coaches, deans, and hourly support. My office does the sub-teachers.
Okay.
But it's collaborative between the two departments.
We're connected.
And anything pretty much in the district crosses both through HR and the finance office, one way or the other.
We cut, Fenmore was, 2 years ago, we took everything over from Fenmore. That was an outlier. They took, they kept everything of their own. And then this year, when we knew when John Ray was leaving, we didn't want to do it while he was here because that's the way he had done business. And that's really moving a person's cheese that's leaving. So we moved it as soon as Chet got acclimated. We've moved everything over to our system. So we're doing, they do, I think they put the person in the system who they're hiring, and then we do the rest, and then it goes to Cassie's office. But we do all HR now for the North Boulder Schools, which was a goal. So we've achieved that.
Good. So all of the third parties do their own?
The third parties, it comes through one of our offices to be paid. It goes through Red Rover. We have a pay system, our check-in system is called Red Rover.
So even though they're third party, we do submit the time that the staff is owed, that they've worked in our district. So that's kind of why they're processing everything, but we still have to approve that they process what those people worked correctly, if that makes sense.
But the funds come from the third party, correct?
Correct. The third party is the one who pays them and issues them their W-2 and all that jazz that goes with that.
That's, and HES is very same.
Mm-hmm. And Sodexo, too, for their staff members.
How many students then do we know are going to be in each? Because when enrollment's already done.
It doesn't, actually, that's a hard question to answer right now because the people that do that work just came back. I know what our numbers were as of last week in all of our buildings, but it changes because during the summer you have so many adds and drops or I mean, Monroe High's numbers have vacillated all very much in the last couple days. So by the first board meeting in September, which, what date is that meeting? The 12th.
Ish.
We'll have, the first 2 weeks of September will really set the marker where our enrollment is. I can give you what it is as of yesterday, but I don't know what it is for sure because it changes daily since they're back to work.
So didn't, Terry, didn't the teacher assignments go out already? Do you guys, didn't?
Yes.
So kids know who their teachers are?
No. They have not gone.
How do kids know? Like, all these people are gone. My kid has this person and my kid, I'm like, how do you know that? And that hasn't went out yet.
It has not gone out yet. The high school.
People are hoping. I'm sorry.
Usually it's the end of this month.
Yeah. Well, school starts on the 3rd, so yeah.
It's always prior to open house. We usually try to do it the week at the elementaries, the weekend before open house. So we usually send them, you know, Thursday or Friday.
Right.
Okay. And has Power School uploaded their information for the higher grades? Or nothing's went out yet? I thought there were packets sent out or something.
Registration packets.
Yeah. Okay.
But that doesn't contain any schedule.
You know, when you get all this information and people are telling you all this stuff, you go, okay, I'm just trying to decipher what is reality. Okay.
Yes. So I'm sure that some of the schools, I think the middle school may have sent out a registration packet. That's just to ascertain information from families and help them complete forms and give them time to do that. But in terms of teacher, who a child will have as their teacher, that information has not.
And that'll be out about the week before
open house.
Open house.
Yep.
What day is open house?
27th.
Yeah, I was going to say it's
good. Well, thank you for the clarification. I like to give out right information.
Right. Well, and tomorrow, Orchard, or Virtual, is doing their registration here tomorrow in this building. They are, we don't know what they have. I mean, we know what they had last year, but we don't know because they haven't done their registration yet. But it is, I think by the meeting that's the 10th, we'll have a pretty good idea of the drops and the ads that we've had. But like in ninth grade right now, when I started, I always start, I do it mid-June, mid-July, and then mid-August, which I did on August 12th. They had 339 ninth graders on the 17th. They have 353 now.
Where'd they go?
No, they're coming up. 339 to 353, they've gone up.
Where'd they go?
Well,
out of the woodwork.
Whichever way you go.
They're coming.
Actually, we don't really care.
We all move in.
They're going to put their butts in our seats. You know?
Later.
I don't know. I don't see that. I'm just looking at straight up numbers. I don't look at the transfer information. I don't need that.
No.
Because it's not. I
no,
do
it's
know,
just an interesting increase.
It isn't, but it always happens.
Yeah.
And Monroe Middle School has gone up too, about 14 kids,
okay.
Which is good.
Right.
I think.
Well, yeah, it is. That means your community is growing. It's a more enrollment.
Yeah.
On Custer and Arborwood. So considering Waterloo has been moved to Custer and Arborwood, I'm surprised to see that the positions, Arborwood positions went down, if I'm reading this correctly. And positions for Custer remain the same. So if we're bringing in, I don't know how many kids were in Waterloo, into those two, how the numbers don't change?
The number of classroom teachers did go up.
Yeah.
If you look at that number,
significantly
at
Custer.
But the positions didn't change.
Well,
six.
The
20%
positions
at Custer.
Changed
well,
from,
did.
From
yeah.
there
yeah.
were 87
yeah.
positions last year. Number of classroom teachers
Arborwood
were 20.
Too.
It must, the assistant ratio must have been less. I know Custer's went up to 57 because the majority of the kids did choose to go to Custer. A good amount of them chose to go to Custer.
Which is why there's six additional teachers.
Right.
But the positions remain the same, essentially. So therefore, other positions had to, because the positions
Arborwood
are 97,
had,
Custer.
Right. Arborwood is the district. Positions that are there also that are listed under district positions, like they have in its district and it's on the secondary page. Look, they have crossing guards, but not in, but they have district PBIS restorative practice coordinators. They have
they get both of those.
Mm-hmm. And, well, one of those, and then they have an ELA. They have an ELL. Teacher, an ELL transition. They have family medical center that go to the elementaries.
But all six don't go to Custer.
Pardon me?
All six of them don't go to Custer.
No.
Okay.
No. But then we have.
No, it's just curious. You would just think that there would be a dramatic change in that based on the population increase.
I might be able to shed a little bit of light. Some of the reasons why those numbers look the way they do. So last year and the year prior, due to the amount of ESSER money that we had, we were able to provide a much higher number of interventionists and academic tutors at each of those buildings so that we were able to help create any learning gaps that had existed as a result of COVID, which was a big purpose of the ESSER funds. And so this year, because we are not going to be able to use ESSER funds to fund those positions, we decreased those positions quite a bit. And I can't remember, I think like by 5 or 6 per building. So that would account for part of that. We also have some positions that we don't have on there, like we don't have enrichment liaisons this year. We're doing without those positions. positions that the buildings just were not able to fill with a person who had the qualifications that were needed for that position. So as we studied staffing with the principal, they decided to eliminate some positions that were previously a part of their staff.
Okay.
If that helps.
Yeah, it does.
Security guards is another thing that decreased. So, and I think there were just some decreases then that as we increased the staff, particularly at Custer and Arborwood, it just kind of balanced out in the number.
Thank you.
Okay. And so the last item is teacher evaluation process.
You're welcome. The beautiful thing about teacher evaluation this year is the state did, I know that the state gets a bad rap sometimes that they don't do wonderful things for teachers or for any educator for that matter, but with this new law that has came into effect July 1st and some other things that are happening on September 1st, it really has leveled the playing field for teachers, and it really does bring equity across the board for teachers and for students. And everyone talks about the M-Step. The state has recognized that the M-Step is just a portion of what the inter-rater reliability tells you about a teacher. You also have to keep, and it's only based on 20% of common assessments, state assessments, and the evaluation is really 80% on the evaluation tool. And that is really a deep breath for educators because it was going to be 40%. They really, the first group that brought it in with the ratings wanted it to be up to 40%. And that's a lot for just one snapshot of what a student can do as in the M-Step. So the key changes, I think, are really good for our district. We have been meeting with our the committee that's the teacher evaluation committee with our union, and we have met twice. We are going to meet again before school starts. They have made changes to even what the state wants to do by doing more than what the state has recommended. They really feel that they want to see the state recommended 2 15-minute times that an evaluator would be in your classroom. Our teachers have gone with, they want it to be 30 minutes because they don't feel that someone can get the true gist of what's going on in just 15 minutes. So they, we're going to do an MOU for this school year because their contract is not up yet. So we're going to do an MOU, and it's going to have all the evaluation guidelines and kind of like a checkoff list, like in September, this is what you have to do. In October, this is what you have to do all the way through the school year for the teacher. Because it's always
okay,
been...
Cindy, you're losing me now. So we're doing an MOU to attach to our contract, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And since it's part of the contract, we have to negotiate, correct?
Yes.
So is that something that they have agreed to?
The union?
Yeah.
Yes.
And what is it specifically that they've agreed to do?
Agreed to...
What's in the MOU?
The MOU is going to be the purpose of the evaluation. It will give the guidelines of the evaluation. It will also...
Okay, what are they?
Well, the guidelines are going to be Danielson 2022.
Okay.
And they're going to have... The evaluation system itself is Danielson 2022.
Okay.
It is also going to give creed to the rights of the tenured teacher. And it's our, we have this in our contract already. Mm-hmm. We sat down with them and really did bring in board policy, mm-hmm. Bring in our contract language that we rewrote a lot of it because a lot of it was misguided, we thought. But
well, okay.
So the rights of the tenured teacher will be explored.
But that's from state statute, right? Where they changed.
Yes.
So we're just incorporating that in the contract, so to speak, with the MOU.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
But they've gone a step further.
Okay.
The state is only recommending 2 15-minute evaluation times 60 days apart. Our MCEA group wants to be 30 minutes, and we agreed to that. And
what's the benefits and the detriments to each of the systems, 30 and 15?
I don't think 15, they didn't, we all agreed. 15 minutes does not give you a total overview. You could sit through probably the large part of the instruction if you're in there for 30 minutes. And 15 minutes isn't enough. It's not, they don't feel that that's a fair amount of time to stay in a classroom.
So that's going to take more of our time, though, correct? For the evaluators?
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
When I say yes and no, I mean we have the ability, and we're going to do this for our administrators in our buildings, we have the ability, if a person in our district has had 3 effective or highly effective evaluations, they do not have to be evaluated every year.
So that's an MOU as well?
That is a part of the law.
New state law.
Yeah, but I mean, we're putting this in the MOU to attach to our contract, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So they will not have, I would say, they will, if we have 80 teachers at the high school mm-hmm. that are effective, we'll put them in a pool, and we've got to agree upon what we're going to do with the union, which we have a great idea of what we want to do. We want to do it by tiers. Like if you're a 3 to 25 year, we want you in this band. If you're a 25 to 20, this band. If you're a 20 or a 20 to 15, we want you in this band. And that's how we'll rotate how they're evaluated.
And everybody's in agreement with this, correct?
Well, we had not talked to them yet about the evaluation system, how we were going to do it with the, but you can't just arbitrarily say, these people, you've got to do it in a format that it is in a rotation basis, that's a fair way to do it.
So they would have no counter proposal to say that, no, we don't like your system.
Uh-uh. No, they're excited about
that. So
that's
pretty well established. That will be an MOU.
Right,
as well.
But it's only for classroom teachers. It does not involve
aides and sure.
Yeah, it does not involve. It's for the certified teachers. And it really, I think it does level the playing field for teachers. And the Danielson model in 2022 has quite a few changes, but it's all based on the child. It's all based on what the teacher does and getting to know the child and making the relationship important.
And you sent us part of the Danielson stuff probably about a year ago. Is there any update on that, or is that the latest?
I am going to give to you in your in-board briefs this week what we're going to provide to all teachers when mm-hmm. they start in the fall. When they start, and we're going to give it. You're hearing this today before our principals hear it tomorrow. I thought it was perfect timing. Mm-hmm. I had been delayed to come and talk, but now there's been so many publications that really support everything that they're going to do. It makes it much easier. You can read about the changes anywhere. I mean, on the Michigan.gov website. But I really think that it's. It removes a punitive aspect of the evaluation, and it really does allow principals to work with people that need help because they don't have to do so many evaluations.
because we're only doing eye classifications and I don't want to say waivers, but.
Yes.
Well, and that's only if they have.
If you're certified for three consecutive years.
I
don't want, maybe waivers are the correct term.
The cycle was as of.
Wanted to make sure.
June 30th, 2024.
Just started the new cycle, so you have to run 3 years.
Uh-oh. We're going to, we go back from that.
You got to look back.
We can go back from that in the old system.
So you can go back. I thought that was a different scale than yours.
Well, it was. It was effective, highly effective, effective.
It's four levels.
Right? Ineffective and minimally effective.
Yep.
And the new ones are now effective, developing, and needing support.
So if people are in these four categories, how do you determine what three categories they go in out of four?
It's only if it's effective, if they have an effective rating.
So you go back and see the highly effective or effective.
So it'd be these two. Anywhere in that ballpark of those two.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was in the board brief talking about they were talking about the evaluation tool that it was $100 and some.
The training that we have to do that's mandated by the state. The inter-rater reliability training for all evaluators has to be done every 3 years. We're purchasing it, so we have it, that they can do it by September 1st. And the new evaluation tool will be associated with that also.
So it's online?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It's through our front line that we do our onboarding.
Yeah. And just like that, you guys will also have the exact same training. For my evaluation, you have to have the same thing done by September 1, so here in 2 weeks, you guys will have it. So.
Well, and it does give the, if you've got effective, if you've been an administrator and you've been given an effective rating for 3 years in a row, you're staggered every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You would go in a pool also, which is nice.
So you may not get evaluated if you're in the pool.
No, that's pool.
Well, no, you wouldn't for two or three. I mean, we can keep track of that.
Yeah.
We can put it in frontline when they're due. I mean, that system is equipped to do that.
Okay. Because otherwise,
somebody would fall through the. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we don't want it to be a true lottery. We want it to be fair.
Okay.
Not that a lottery isn't fair, but.
The teachers will like the idea of using their longevity.
Absolutely.
Not the tenure. Longevity is their seniority. So
you lost me, Andy.
So seniority. So when they get put in their groups, it's about seniority.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. Okay. So it's one of the perks that a teacher has. You know, I've been here for 25 years, so I've had three consecutive years of highly effective. Well, guess what? I'm in that top pool, so I'm done for three more years.
Yep.
Now that next group, the next group. So that other group.
3 years.
Yeah.
Is that a wise idea?
Well, you know what?
It doesn't stop you, though, from if you think you need to evaluate a teacher, you still have the ability to go in and evaluate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If something happens, you still have that right there.
And we did in our committee that we met in, we talked about that.
Yep.
They know that. I mean, it happens. You can be walking down a hallway and hear a teacher say something once, you hear it twice, you're like, well, you're going to say something the once.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take that right out of the way that we can get into classrooms.
Yep.
But they were awesome. We had a really fun time doing it. Terry led that meeting. And it was good fun.
Fun.
She's like, fun?
Well, you didn't lead it. You did the technical work.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So with all the teacher evaluation process, is this going to have any implications for the high quality instruction walkthroughs that we currently do?
Terry would love to answer. Because we talked about that.
Terry's going to say, I think Cassie will love to. Nope. No, just, you can pass it on now. No, go ahead.
She has it.
So the high quality instruction walks that Mary is referring to are opportunities that happen every week in the building. Coaches, maybe a few teachers, they pop into predetermined classrooms. They might look at the encore at Ray teacher is striving to accomplish, and then a few days later, the principal would go in and observe the lesson, and then after the lesson, there's a post-conference where the principal and the teacher sit down and debrief on the lesson, and then there's a formal summary of that lesson that is provided to the teacher. So they're two very different processes within the district. Did that answer? Yes. Thank you.
All right. Can we get a motion to adjourn this meeting?
Support.
All right. Show of hands. All right. This meeting is adjourned, and we'll start our board meeting at 7 o'clock sharp.
Thank you.